Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Monday, March 23rd. With us now for a Washington take on coronavirus developments, Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. Hi, Susan. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian. It's good to be with you.
So let me just dive right into this central life and death question right now, which is how much can private industry on its own ramp up production of masks, ventilators, and other life-saving medical equipment? President Trump keeps resisting calls from New York and even elsewhere. I'm seeing other governors, Democrat and Republican, who have the most dire shortages, who want him to intervene with industry to order more production under the Defense Production Act. The president last night said he's trying to avoid the heavy hand of government. What's his policy at this point? And have you seen good answers from economists or anything else, anyone else, as to whether the profit motive is enough to get companies to do what's needed?
Well, there are a couple things that invoking the Defense Production Act would do. It would allow the government to coordinate this, for one thing. One thing we're hearing from some businesses is that they are a little at sea about what exactly they could do to be most helpful, even if they want to be helpful. So under this law, the federal government could say, make this, not that. The other thing that the law would allow the federal government to do is to decide where scarce resources go. So you could direct it to places like New York and California and Washington State that have been the hardest hit, as opposed to this competition that we heard governors talking about yesterday on the Sunday shows, where they're bidding against one another for resources. And then the resources may not necessarily go to the place that needs them most. So these are the reasons that I think some officials have encouraged the president to invoke this law and are, I think, surprised that he hasn't been willing to do it. In fact, on Friday, the president told us that he had done it. But it turned out that what he was referring to was simply a bureaucratic step of invoking the law, not actually using the powers that the law would give him.
Do you have a sense what his actual resistance is? Is it just the usual Republican reluctance to use government to tell business what to do? Is it the fact that when you come right down to it, the states that are the hardest hit have so far been blue states, New York, California, and Washington, although I understand Louisiana is getting into that territory too? What is it? Why doesn't he just do it?
So it's hard to, you know, I wouldn't pretend to know, be inside the president's mind on what his exact motivation is. He does talk about the heavy hand of government. He has railed against socialism. He's accused Democrats of being socialists. That's been one of the themes that we've heard from him in the presidential campaign already. Some people also speculate that he is concerned that if he does this step, which is a dramatic step, he then owns the crisis in a bigger way and will be held more responsible than he would be otherwise when there are shortages of these desperately needed supplies.
The president's head of FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, had a hard time at one of the news conferences over the weekend saying where the masks from a national stockpile that does exist are going. And even the president, who is famously vague on things like this himself, got into the act of questioning him. Here's that excerpt.
When will masks start coming in?
They're out there now. So again, we want to get out of the middle, I think.
I appreciate that.
That's what I like to know.
So we're trying to match suppliers with demand. So that's what we're doing right now. It's happening today.
They can expect them to there. They're matching supply and demand.
There's a range of requests across the country, and we're trying to match those, supply and demand every day.
So I think that was Saturday. Do we know any more today about the matching of supply and demand and the actual distribution after they match on paper?
Well, we know that the FEMA director on CNN couldn't even give a rough estimate of how many masks have been sent. And I think this is one of the things that alarms Americans when they see this. It doesn't seem like a system that is being run very well. And we don't have details on what they've done, how they've done it, how many masks have been sent. And when places like New York and California and Washington, Louisiana can expect to have enough masks, not to have these extraordinary situations where healthcare professionals are talking about making their own masks or trying to sterilize used masks to use again. It's so extraordinary to think of a country like the United States, a wealthy country, to be in this situation.
That's right. Nobody ever thought we would be in this situation, except when the president says that, then there's a comeback to that, which is that there are people who thought we could be in this situation. There was a pandemic preparedness report. There have been many. And there were warnings that the U.S. Was not ready for something like this that experts knew could potentially occur.
Yes, that's true. And there were both, agencies looking over the long haul warning about this, including an office in the National Security Council that President Obama created and President Trump dismantled. And there were also early warning signs from China in January and February that should have served as an early warning system. Those warnings were generally not heeded by the federal government. And that left us with weeks of time squandered that could have been used to address some of these concerns.
And Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has been talking about a rent freeze. And we have a question from a listener on Twitter who writes, are there any national efforts to put a temporary freeze on commercial and residential rent and mortgage payments, property taxes, water and sewer? Did the president announce anything like this?
No. And I heard the congresswoman talk about that yesterday as well. But I've heard of no serious proposal in Washington to do something like that. Now, the relief bill that is now being cobbled together in the Senate does include cash payments to Americans, $1,200 for workers who make up to $75,000 a year, $500 for each child. And that's designed to help people, Americans who are having trouble paying their rent or buying their food. But in terms of the nationwide rent freeze, that is not something I've heard discussed in a serious way.
The vote on the stimulus bill failed in the Senate last night. Democrats and Republicans seem to have a classic partisan divide over who should be helped in the stimulus bill. Can you describe it briefly from both sides' point of view?
So this was on a procedural motion. We're going to have that Mitch McConnell had scheduled to see if he could get this bill passed this morning. It went down. Democrats held together against it. You know, there's a lot of, for a bill that is going to spend close to $2 trillion, there is a lot of agreement on what it ought to do. But there is disagreement and the most serious disagreement goes with what kind of restrictions do you put on corporations that get loans under this plan. That is, I think, the biggest issue that they were trying to iron out. For instance, would companies be prevented from accepting the money and then buying back their own stock, which is something that happened with the 2008 rescue package designed to drive up stock prices, not to help workers? There's another concern about the powers given to the Treasury Secretary both to waive restrictions on what companies can do if they accept this loan money and his ability to keep secret what loans are made for up to 6 months. So while I think much of the bill, there's surprising bipartisan agreement on much of the bill. Who thought Republicans would agree on cash payments to Americans, including those who don't have any taxable income? But I think that the concerns about restrictions on corporations that get loans are the big issue. And that reflects, in a big way, lessons learned after the 2008 bailout.
And, of course, we'll watch the negotiations on that bill as they proceed through the day. I know both sides want to get it done. We'll see if they can get to yes. And then what kinds of slush funds for corporate America or anything else people have to live with in there that they don't like. On getting resources to where they're needed, and for that matter, not taking resources away from where they're needed, I don't know if you're on this part of it Susan. And my guest, if you're just joining us, is Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today, Susan Page. But the president was talking about calling up the National Guard, and I think he did it yesterday for New York and California and Washington. And a doctor wrote to me with concerns that there are a lot of healthcare workers in the National Guard. So I don't know if they could be exempted, if this is anything you know about. Or this doctor writes, we could try to pull doctors from parts of the country that aren't hard hit. We could do that through the private sector, perhaps as easily, honor medical licenses from any state and give people emergency privileges. The Army could then set up a tent city in Central Park to house the docs, or local hotels could be enlisted by the president. Just some things to think about. Is anybody talking about things like that?
The question about the National Guard is an interesting one because, of course, the last thing we want to do is pull medical professionals who are working in places out of them to serve with the National Guard. That is a good question. The other question that came up with the National Guard activation by the president was whether this was a precursor to martial law. And the White House has tried to reassure people that it's not that. It's just the traditional uses of the National Guard. And this is a way to provide federal money to pay for them while leaving them under the control of the governors in each state.
Senator Rand Paul tested positive yesterday, and he and Mitt Romney, who had close contact with Rand Paul, have gone into quarantine. How does that affect the ability to pass legislation?
You know, senators are usually give a lot of slack to other senators, but you know how you can piss off senators? You can expose them to the coronavirus by behaving in ways that just seem quite careless. And of course, he's an ophthalmologist. He's in the medical profession. You'd think Rand Paul would know better. I think that the fact that Rand Paul is now out of the Senate, two additional senators have self-quarantined, Mike Lee and Mitt Romney, because they spent time with him. It did not cause the procedural motion to go down yesterday, but it could be a problem down the road, especially if we see the number of lawmakers who are quarantined rise. I mean, just an hour ago, Amy Klobuchar revealed that her husband has been diagnosed with the coronavirus and is in a hospital. So this is something that could affect the, you know, what we call the continuation of government, right? The ability of Congress to function. A lot of talk now about the possibility of going to some kind of remote voting system, something that Congress has never done.
How hard would it be for them to do that, to suspend the requirement for in-person voting?
Well, a colleague of mine was reading the Constitution and didn't see anything that would make it unconstitutional. It would certainly be unconventional, and you would need to have some significant security controls to make sure that it wasn't open to some kind of hack.
Let me end with some pure politics. President Trump's approval rating for his handling of the virus is, in the last report I saw, in positive territory, like 55 to 45, even though so many others watch these news conferences and judge him to have not only willfully squandered time to address the virus early, other than the one move to cut off travel from China, which he did do, but that his daily appearances are mostly backslapping and self-aggrandizement, not public information. So who's liking him and who's not in this crisis?
Well, the markets are not liking him. We've seen on a couple of these briefings, the markets go down as he starts talking, that he's raising concerns, not offering reassurance. What we have is one poll, an ABC Ipsos poll, that did show the president's approval rating going up 12 points in a week. That is a really significant spike, and it put him in positive territory. But I would just say two things. One, you need more than one poll before you know it's true, right? We have outlier polls always. All the time. The other thing is sometimes Americans at times of peril rally around their leader in a way that he or she cannot count on to continue. And I'm thinking, for instance, of President Carter in the Iranian hostage crisis, there was initially a kind of rally around the president's sense. But at the end, his handling of that crisis contributed to his defeat for reelection. So I would just say, that I love polls. Let's watch polls. But I would like to see a little more data over a little longer time before we reach conclusions about how this is affecting Americans' views of the president.
Susan Page, Washington Bureau Chief for USA Today. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you, Brian. Stay safe.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is obviously also a Daily Coronavirus podcast under the circumstances in our country right now. We'll keep staying on top of things to serve you the best we can. And remember, this podcast is excerpted from my live weekday call-in show, The Brian Lehrer Show. If you want to be a caller or just hear it live, it's from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time on WNYC Radio in New York or online at WNYC.org. You can also tweet a question at us anytime. Just tweet at Brian Lehrer. Thanks for listening today.